These are the Keshi Tapes. U-Man and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Keshi, the longest-running rock station in the country.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? I'm John Hewlett, along with the mighty Favaz, and it's time for the Keshi Tapes podcast 42.
Yep, 42.
Yeah, this is one that features Jackson Browne. Jackson Browne, legendary performer in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He came to St. Louis in, well, he's been here many times, but he came here in 1989, about a couple years after the release of Lives in the Balance. And he was touring, and I had an opportunity to go to the sound check beforehand, mm-hmm. which is also on this tape, but we can't play it because there's music involved. In podcasts, you can't do music.
Right.
And then I got a chance to interview him backstage at the Fox Theater after the sound check.
How many times have you seen Jackson Browne in concert?
A couple times.
I've seen him once. He was great.
Yeah, he is great.
Yeah.
The last time I saw him, I was a little... a lot of the show was...
political?
No, just songs that were pretty deep in the catalog, and I feel like I go pretty deep in his catalog.
Right.
But I didn't recognize some of the songs, but he finished strong. The second half of the show was really strong, and, he's a legendary guy. You know, wrote Take It Easy for the Eagles with Glenn Frey.
There. Yep.
Linda Ronstadt and him had a so close association. A lot of artists have recorded with him, and he's very charitable and very much involved in politics,
yes.
as you said.
Yes.
All right, so let's go back to 1989 at the Fox Theater here in St. Louis.
72. It's Dr. My Eyes, I think. Right. Okay, here we go. Jackson Browne, 3, 2, 1. Jackson, I had a chance to watch you do your sound check out there on stage, and I mean, it's very obvious, not just by watching that sound check, but also listening to your music and appreciating your music for so many years, that you're just a very serious man when it comes to your product.
I like to get all the details right, it's true, but really, it's not that. It's something we do every day.
Yeah.
And take somebody to say, okay, now we go over here and do this, and now we do that, because everybody's got their own sound to deal with, and I don't play any one instrument as well as I play a band. You know, it's my concern.
There's no doubt that it is your band too. I mean, you not bark orders. I mean, you don't push people around and stuff. But it is your band. You know, and I've kind of noticed that Jackson Browne doesn't do a lot of work with other people. You like to do your own thing. Is that an accurate characterization of you?
I work with people all the time.
I mean, big name people, big name artists.
Oh, you mean like duets and stuff?
Yeah,
I'm.
He just said, I work with a lot of people. And you're like, you don't work with a lot of people.
Well, I mean, and he's getting to what my point was, but, like doing things, sharing the spotlight with other, big name artists. He's always pretty much been his own guy, writing his own music.
I have, done duets with people, and I've got people who are, I suppose, they're, famous people on my records, but no, not for the sake of that kind, not for the sake of having a celebrity duet, no.
Right.
I'm a little bit allergic to that kind of thing, I mean, I would never, call up somebody who I know is a great musician and just say, hey, you don't know me, but how about if we do a duet?
Right. Yeah, it's been a case of, at least in the last few years, I know, for you, where you've seemed like you're on a mission. Is that an accurate way to put that? I mean, your last two albums have been heavily political.
Well, I don't mind if you say that. Really, there have been things that I've really wanted to address. But I find that it's just become a part of my life, and it's like from the beginning, I've wanted to address all the issues in my life, mm-hmm. Earlier on, maybe when my second record came out, a really good friend of mine, a guy that I knew really well for many years before I ever made any records, and I told him, I said, I know, Roger, I know you don't really like my music that much, because he never did. He had his own music, and he was always very critical of mine. He said, no, that's not it. It's not that I don't like your song. It's just you're not really telling us, you're not really showing us everything, about you. There are lots of things about you that you don't write about. And since he said that, we're on the second album, I've considered it important to try to address everything that's going on in my life.
And it's been very clear. Yeah, it's been very clear. I mean,
but that's not to say that I just only want to, you know, like more and more I'm referred to as a political artist, as somebody that's writing on political themes. And I really don't mind that people say that because it's true, but it's not. It's certainly not the all I write about.
Yeah, you're not going to get a lick it up from Jackson Brown, you know.
No. That's funny. But, you know, thinking about when this was recorded in 1989, he has been on the political side of things for a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you think back to 1989, who was doing stuff like that? The band that comes to my mind real quick is U2.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Very political.
Well, I mean, Crosby, Stills, Nash, they were always political going way back to the 60s.
But at that time.
Well, what I think happened is I think rock and roll was very political in the 60s and the early 70s with the Vietnam War going on and, mm-hmm. Civil rights and all that. And then it kind of went into a lull period where artists didn't do much of that. And then
right.
in the mid-80s, he was kind of like a part of that.
Bruce did it a little bit.
Yeah.
Just
Springsteen.
Tiny bit.
As a matter of fact, Springsteen and Jackson Brown are very close.
Yes,
and
they are.
Jackson, as a matter of fact, Bruce Springsteen, I believe, was the one that inducted Jackson Brown into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's
so,
pretty cool.
Yeah, they really have a lot of appreciation for each other's ability
Let me ask you this.
To write songs.
So Jackson Brown has basically straight hair, kind of?
Yeah, stringy straight hair.
So it was Brown back then, I'm assuming, in 1989, correct?
It was, but I remember.
So does he color his hair, John, is what I want to know. In 2019, because I don't really know what he looks like. I'll have to look him up.
Yeah, look him up, see. Well, I mean, what happens when, guys who get into their 70s color their hair, they want it to be dark and it's white, it usually turns orange, you know, or some sort of like pukey brown look.
Wow, I am looking at him right now.
It's diarrhea brown.
There's older pictures. There's just nothing. I don't see anything here.
He's really, as of late, you haven't heard or seen much of him.
Look at that. I'm showing the U-Man picture right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Here, there's another one. So he has let it go gray.
Oh, yeah, he has a little bit. Yeah.
All right.
Has he got a Fu Manchu going there, too, now?
Not on that picture.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
I see you laugh. I see you have a good time up there on that stage as well. And you know, I think some people say, man, Jackson Brown never smiles. I bet the guy never smiles. His music seems to be very serious, and it's very, very untrue. But does it bother you that people characterize you that way sometimes?
Yeah, especially if they don't. I mean, if it's people that, if they get that impression by looking at one song, you know. But it's never been true. I mean, I have a great time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a great time on stage. I have a good time in my life. And
I kind of been busting his ass here, haven't I?
You have, totally, in this interview. And I just came across a picture where he has a porn stash.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what year this is, but it reminds me of the mustache that you had.
Yes.
Well, you had a porn stash, too.
70s, you had to have a mustache, man. He kind of looks like James Taylor there, too.
He does. A lot of his pictures without the porn stash, he looks like James Taylor. Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing was what's in the porn stash when you're... No, never.
Stop it.
You know, I think you have to be willing to, you know, you have to take a few risks and be willing to look ridiculous to talk about something you feel is important, you know? I mean, no one really enjoys sticking their neck out, you know what I mean? And I mean, I suppose in these days, I mean, you can feel silly if you... And be made to feel silly by taking yourself too seriously, you know? But if you're not willing to take those chances, then you're probably not going to stand a chance to actually ever say very much, you know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of sticking your neck out, sometimes you express political views that may not necessarily be very popular, especially in this country now where we seem to be in a relatively conservative mode. Do you ever concern that someone
it's
would...
It's been that way so long, you know. It's been conservative so long, I don't really worry about that. You know, first things first.
Oh, by the way, he's a liberal.
Yes.
Yeah, just in case you don't know.
I figured people would know, but, this is 89, so we've gone through two Reagans, and now president then was George H.W. Bush.
89, yes. Yeah, who was
so
elected
Clinton
in 88.
Clinton hadn't been there yet.
No. Yeah. He was on the horizon.
Right.
You talk about what you know and what you believe in.
Right.
I don't worry about. I mean,
Have you ever had to be concerned about your own well-being from something you wrote or something you said in an interview or sang in a song?
No, you know, I haven't. I haven't. I don't worry about it. You know, this is America.
I worry about it.
You worry about you all the time. But wow, you know, he kind of sounds. You know who he sounds like?
Who?
Just right there, Neil Sean of Journey.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And we've had Neil on the podcast before.
But... Yeah, he does a little bit.
Yeah.
You're entitled to your beliefs, and you can stand up and nothing... I mean, no, somebody in my position is not going to be... Not going to be attacked or harassed. I mean, for by that I mean, you know, a public person. I mean, there's certainly a lot of people who have been singled out and harassed for their beliefs in this country, even though what we subscribe to is, you know, freedom and you know, freedom of expression, First Amendment, you know, freedom. Like Mark Twain said, in this country we have freedom of speech and freedom of religion and the good sense not to exercise either one.
We're speaking with Jackson.
Wow.
That's a good Mark Twain phrase right
there. Yeah, wow. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
That's funny.
Until 1989 and from no one else since. Wow. I haven't listened to this interview since maybe 1989, 1990, something like that.
With most of them, I think it sounds good. And this is on cassette, by the way, everybody.
Yes. Yeah, it sounds good, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, Jackson, what would you say your two favorite pieces of work?
I'd say Daphne and Apollo by Bernini in the Borghese Gallery. And then maybe...
Michelangelo's Dead or Not. Okay. You
know. I know, I didn't get the joke.
Is that a painting or something?
Yours, though. Yours. The things that you've done. It'd be nice to be able to lay claim to those, but...
Yeah. What my favorite
Pretender,
work that I've done.
The Pretender? I mean, that's...
You know,
that's...
I have about... The songs that I'm doing tonight, you know, comprise pretty much my favorite songs that I've done. Although there are maybe just as... There may maybe another 10 or so that are missing because you can't do, you know, a three and a half hour show. So...
Sure you can.
That's the great thing about...
Yeah.
Your friend Bruce Springsteen does.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you can do a three-hour show, Jackson. Come on.
Playing live is you get a chance to do your favorite songs and the ones that have stayed written. I like In the Shape of a Heart. I like
That's
the
a
Pretender.
Great one.
I like The Pretender. I like...
What was your mindset when you wrote In the Shape of a Heart? I mean, what...
Well, you just read the song, you know, read the words and you know that. You
well,
know.
I know.
No. I can't figure that song out. I've listened to it a bunch of times and I got kind of an idea, but it was never clear to me.
That's a good question. I love questions like this, and I ask them quite a bit. You know, what were you thinking when you wrote this song, or what was the inspiration? I loved. Does he? I hope he answers.
I hope
here.
He does. Let's see. I don't remember. I thought he did.
He was kind of dissing you right there. He's like, read the lyrics.
Yeah, I thought he did, and then he explained it, and I still didn't get it. I think that's how it turns
okay,
out.
Okay, let's see.
I mean, I listened to the song many times, and it's one of my favorite songs ever written by anybody, ever recorded by anybody. And just when I think that I'm about ready to. Get the entire message, a line will come in and say, no, it's about this. So I said to myself, when
it's
I get a hold of him...
It's my kind of song. It's my favorite kind of song, a song that is not... It seems to be about something tangible that you can focus on and think about. There seem to be events that are alluded to in the song, but it's also ambiguous, and it seems to be, you know, there seem to be several meanings to some of the things, you know, spoken about. Just the whole mysterious act of drawing, you know, the whole thing about this heart, you know, the shape of a heart meaning, you know, in the shape of a heart, meaning like, you know, the shape, something that is heart-shaped.
See? We'll see what happens here.
But... He's trying to explain.
He's trying.
But also the condition of a heart, the condition of a life, you know. So... And by we're getting to repeat this thing in the shape of a heart, you know, and so many things are done. The other thing I liked about that particular song is the chance to define love in a number of different ways. Because we always use the word love all the time. Love you, you know. I love this potato salad. It's ridiculous, man. It means good, you know. Whatever does love means, but when you describe, you know, like people speak of love, they think in terms of. I mean, a life and learning and try to think of some word for the burning and you know, people think of the way it just sort of approximates the way people try to express something and they wind up using the word love,
right.
You know, to express so many things. So in a way, that song was a chance to almost catalog some of the important things, but not the least of which is forgiving.
And that last line in the song, though, about the
We're not going to get a straight answer out of it. I can tell.
But it is cool to hear him try to, you know, put it into words himself.
Yeah, he's not the only
one.
You know, any kind of songwriter, serious songwriter, will basically answer the question the same way.
Yeah.
You know, it could mean this. It could mean that.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this, you know.
And you know that song, right, in the show?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. It's great.
Reefs, you know, you can see the top of them, but you don't know how deep they go.
You try so hard. Try so hard.
He's trying to remember the words of the song.
I guess that's not one of his favorite ones that he does, John.
No, it is. Matter of fact, at the sound check, he spent more time on that song than any of them.
Really?
Yeah.
To keep a life from falling apart and never know the shallows and the unseen reefs that are there from the start.
I mean, that's
in the shape of a heart.
That was a great line, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic
that's
line.
That's a great line, yeah.
And I think it's cool also to see this artist, who's probably performed that song many, many times. He knows the words when he's singing them. I bet because he's talking them, he couldn't quite get the words right.
I get it. You know, I totally get it.
That was a great line, to say the least. Is it strange to you to realize, when you realize that it's been 17 years since Doctor My Eyes?
Well, yeah, I'm not even sure that's right. Is that
72 right? Is what it says on the album, anyway.
72. That makes it, yeah.
You've been to Central America.
He was doubting your math, John.
Yeah. But he didn't know. It was like, wow, that was his signature song for a long time in his career, and he wasn't that tuned into how old that song actually was at that moment.
Isn't that about when he wrote with the Eagles too?
Yes, yeah,
about the same time.
About the same time.
A couple times, ain't it? Twice, three times?
About four or five times too. Well, and just to Nicaragua. I've never been to the other countries.
I bring this up because the album "Lives in the Balance" is about a lot of the political stuff that was going on in the '80s down in Central America, and what the Reagan administration was doing, and some people had a problem with that. And so he did his homework before writing that album and putting those songs together. So let's see what he says here.
I've been to Mexico, I've been to Nicaragua.
And what you've seen there is probably what soldiers who have been in that area and have been in Honduras have come and told me, that the United States has wasted a lot of money and a lot of people have died, and there has been absolutely nothing gained. And then you see Oliver North get the sentence that he got. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's really... I tell you, okay. Let me make two points. One, I mean, I think it's a shame that people in government can commit crimes and get relatively light sentences, and people in ordinary walks of life, minorities, people who are really subject to all kinds of injustice all their lives, are prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and unfortunately, he's a symbol of something, and there's a whole political, you know, nature of all that. I don't really care that much about Oliver North. He's kind of a... But I think what's unfortunate is that so many questions are raised about the behavior of his superiors, and they won't be tried, and they won't... And the things that really came out in that trial and all the investigations and the ways in which it was blocked and sort of, you know, swept under the carpet... is a real crime. It's a crime against our form of government. It's a crime against the Constitution, because here's a person who subverted the Constitution, and all the rhetoric that they put forth about protecting our way of life in America and all that doesn't mean a thing when you realize that what he was willing to do was lie to the American people, lie to our elected officials, and completely subvert our representative form of government. And I think we have a very strange sense of justice here. I mean, there are other places people are. I mean, this is treason. You know, there are lots of countries where someone in his position would be executed for having done this. But you know, I don't advocate that he be executed. I don't even care that he goes to jail or not. I think it's, you know, you have to realize the man's been made into a hero. The fine means nothing, because he can make that in a week doing public speaking engagements. But I think that more should be, we should really look further into these questions. I think George Bush should answer for his part in this. And I think that, I mean, it's too late to do anything about Reagan, and it's pointless to do anything about Reagan. He was, you know, basically, you know, he sort of did his part perfectly, you know, very, very revealing the last few years. And I think people, the last few years, we've seen that, we've seen exactly what his role as president has been, and many Americans don't want to look at that. They don't want to. They don't want to. They don't want to. sort of add up the scorecard and say, geez, there was an actor in the White House, and all this stuff went on he knew nothing about or claims to know nothing about. And, you know, it says a lot about us.
Right. We're speaking with Jackson Brown there.
Wow. So yeah. Two things that I got from there. 30 years later, nothing has changed.
Yeah, a lot of similarities. Yeah.
Number two, he is a very intelligent guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And the way that he was speaking about everything that was going on, whether you agree with him or not,
right.
I mean, he can tell the passion in his voice, and, you know, he understood the bullshit that was going on back then.
Yeah. Yeah, and it could articulate it, too. And a lot of what he said there, especially about Oliver North, came true. I mean, Oliver North ended up making tons of money at speaking engagements.
Yeah.
Got a association with Fox News for a long time. They paid him a lot of money. Has made a lot of money speaking for the National Rifle Association and everything else. You know, so Jackson was pretty much on the money there.
Jackson Brown, very smart guy. I mean, you know, and you could tell he didn't want to talk about it in the very beginning, and then you get him going, and then he just went with it, man.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, I didn't say a damn word. Just let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson, what do you do away from the music? Somebody told me that what Jackson Brown does away from the music is watch CNN 24 hours a day.
That's not true. First place, you can't get that much out of CNN. But
at least not the 30-minute headlines, because it's only got 30 minutes.
CNN is, you see, if you were in Italy or someplace where, you know, you have all the other stations are in English, it does have a sort of a... It's headline. It is a headline service. You can't get much depth out of any television news program, including McNeil Lair News Hour. I mean, that's really... You know, coverage is very biased. You have to understand that it's basically privately owned. It's a big business, you know.
And CNN was the only station going back then, too. MSNBC was not around.
1989.
Fox News was not out yet, I don't believe, in 89. So, yeah.
He could be talking about fake news here, John, and he didn't even know it.
Oh, let's see.
So if you wanted... but you asked me what I do. You know, I mean, I spend time with my family. I have a little piece of land in California that I go to, and I like to spend time out with my family. And I like to make music. I spend most of my time playing. And I kind of scan the newspapers and I watch the TV. I mean, I'm more interested.
Don't forget the radio.
And radio too. As a matter of fact, I wound up listening to radio a lot the last couple of years. In many ways, radio is a much freer medium than newspapers, because there isn't the focus on the news, and it's really possible to sometimes get through, you know, like I say something there.
How much longer are you going to do what you're doing?
I really don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
And this is Jackson Brown, and this is 1989.
Yeah, so. 30 years later, let's see what he says.
I'll always make music, you know, I will always write songs, but whether or not I'll always tour or make records, I really can't say. I think
he could not foresee the internet at that time either.
No.
And see what the internet has done to the industry. And, I mean, you know, he can record songs, write songs now, but what record company is even going to deal with him anymore? I don't think he has a record deal.
Well, he doesn't need one.
Yeah.
Just put it out.
But still, it's hard for him to
get. People will find it.
A couple ideas. I've got it, you know, a while longer, you know. I just don't know. I'm getting old, you know. I'm 40, you know.
Are you 40?
Going from city to city in a bus, sleeping on a bus, and getting up at 5 in the morning and moving into the hotel room and trying to sleep again. There are things about it that are real disruptive. Like right now I have my son out on tour with me, and he's working in the crew, but... You know, well, it's always been something that's hard to do when you have kids. You know, it's hard to...
You're a very private person. Everybody's very well aware of that. Obviously, you've married a very famous woman. It's hard to have a private life when you're famous and your wife is famous.
Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah, who he is divorced from now, and she is married to...
She's married to Neil Young.
Neil Young.
Yeah.
Just a few years ago.
Right. And there was a physical altercation between these two, apparently, Daryl Hannah and Jackson Brown, that Jackson took a lot of heat for.
Mm-hmm.
This must have been before that. Let's see.
Well, actually, we're not married, but I think that...
Scoop!
You know, we've been together a long time, and that's, you know, it's...
Uh-oh, you could tell right there.
Okay, I can't wait to hear what he says.
A life together is something that is you know, it's not helped by you know, scads of people you don't know, you know, thinking they or wanting to know all about your, you know, private life. And so, you know, we protect that. I don't talk about my relationship, and I don't discuss it publicly. And there's no reason to. I mean, it's not, you know.
That's not the product.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think that people in this country, more and more, there's an obscuring of the line between celebrity and contribution. I mean, you're supposed to be a celebrity for something. You know, you're supposed to be celebrated for something, for your music or for your writing or something. But there's also just, there are really quite a few people that are simply famous for being famous. There's a whole industry around the exploiting of the... We were laughing because this... 3 years ago, I'll never forget this place. I mean,
The
Fox Theater, one, it's a great place to play. Oh, and it sounds good in here. And when you walk in here, you see that all the walls backstage are all written on by all these people, from Sammy Davis to Simple Minds. Okay, so you... But we were sitting up there, and somebody had the TV on, and we watched this lifestyle. So they're rich and famous. Oh, man. Oh, and it was... God, what is his name? You know, George.
Who the guy who?
Guy is really, he's famous for being tan. You know.
Oh yeah, George Hamilton. We all know who you're talking about, George
Hamilton. Say it.
Picture
George,
John. Say it.
George Hamilton.
Hamilton. Hey! I was just saying the same thing to somebody the other day. Wow. Famous for being tan.
Famous for being tan, which is to take, you know, the sort of idea of famous for being a celebrity even a step further. I mean, tan.
That's hilarious.
My bass player's family just presented him with an autograph from George Hamilton because they saw him, you know, hawking his tanning wares in some department store, and they could line up and get an autograph. You know, anyway, it's that stuff. I get a big kick out of it because I mean, how far can you go with this stuff? I mean, there are so many people that are famous for being famous, you know. And by the same token, you know, I don't really like to. I don't let people use my songs to have, you know, like for hamburgers or motor oil or stuff like that. You know, I think that.
Yeah, can you name a Jackson Brown song that's been used in a commercial ever? I cannot.
You know, then it was a big deal to say, hey, we're not going to let him.
Yeah.
It's done all the time now, though.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
By artists who back then were saying we would never do it.
We would never do it, but it's done by, like, the music may have come out just, you know, 5 or 6 months ago, and already it's on a commercial. Queen, you know, we had Brian May on.
Right.
They never held back about letting their music go, you know, being played by... As long as they got paid.
And it's paid off, because I was talking to my daughter, my youngest daughter, about Queen music the other day, and she was telling me how she knew certain Queen songs from the different movies they were in, different television shows, and commercials.
Yep.
That's how she knows Queen. You'd think she'd be listening to her father on the radio, but nope.
I won't be able to remember the songs. And maybe I'm overprotective, you know, but
You did. Pardon me for interrupting, but you did let them use Lives in the Balance for that PBS special that Bill Moyers did, which is rare for a rock and roll video.
Yeah, well, that was, yeah, exactly.
That was for a cause, not a product, I realize.
That was a matter of using the song to draw out certain issues and points about a subject. I mean, that's exactly what the song is written for. So you can't really go into much depth in a song. You can kind of point to an area. You can make a few salient points, you know, but you can't really discuss it in great depth. And you can make people want to know more.
I mean, really, you know, Doctor My Eyes, how many health insurance companies would have used that? Or
Lawyers in Love.
Yeah, Lawyers in Love, you know, Brown and Crouppen.
Hopefully. But, I mean, they don't, you know, like, they wanted, you know, tender is the night for chicken tenders, right? I mean, tender.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Your chicken, right, kind of thing. Like, right. Or, you know, running on Pennzoil or something. You know?
Running on empty.
Running
but
empty.
After
a while, you know. Running on Pennzoil,
funny.
So they must have approached him.
Yeah, they
did
approach him. Yeah, obviously.
Patient will come up there that knows the music from the commercial and not from the song. You know,
that would be the ultimate insult.
It wouldn't be. No. It's not insulting, and it's not that. And it would be, you know, like, hey, this. Most people would say, oh well, you know, this song had its life, and now it's making money as a commercial in 30-second spots.
Yeah.
But yeah, does that mean a song is dead once you start hearing it in commercials? It has no social value anymore if it was written for that particular purpose? Kind of.
Kind of.
Yeah. Especially if it really catches on with the commercial and the product.
But now, like I said, you know, songs can come out 5 or 6 months ago and they're already on TV, you know, endorsing a product.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are those songs dead now too?
Yeah. I mean, you know? I'll tell you one that's been bastardized lately for me is Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac. You hear it in all kinds of different stuff. There's a drug commercial for it right now.
Right.
Where don't listen to your doctor, go your own way.
Yeah, that's real smart.
I don't think Stevie and Lindsay or whoever had that in mind when they wrote it.
Right.
But you know. Anyway.
I think about the people who like the song and remember the song, and I want to protect their idea of what the song is and not have them turn around and hear it as a, you know, shampoo commercial or a burger commercial or something.
All right. Thank you, Jackson Brown. I appreciate the interview at KC95, and we've been playing your music for a long time, and we will continue to do so.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Jackson, can I get you to do a promo real quick?
Sure.
Okay.
Where's this at?
KC95.
I don't know.
KC.
Hold on.
Huh?
Let's hear this.
KC.
KC.
Yeah, KC95. Hi, this is Jackson Brown. You're rocking with the Morning Zoo on KC95. That'll be fine.
Okay. Hi, this is Jackson Brown. You're rocking with the Morning Zoo on KC95.
Okay, just one other one for the radio station.
Actually, we played in a zoo last night.
Toledo Zoo.
Yeah, we played in the... You know, we were going to play this place as the Zoo Amphitheater, and I thought, oh, yeah, it's like the Morning Zoo. Like, they got these radio stations, it's, you know, promoted by the zoo or something like that. We're literally in a zoo.
That's fine. Polar bears get in the way?
They had these cheetahs next door. They had been playing my album to them for a month, trying to get them ready so they wouldn't flip, you know. He started out playing.
Okay, KC95 is the home of classic rock in St. Louis. Hi, this is Jackson Brown, and you're listening to KC95, the home of classic rock in St. Louis.
Hi, this is Jackson Brown. You're listening to KC95, the home of classic rock in St. Louis.
Man, he was good, wasn't he?
Wow. You know, I like it. He just right back, because some are just like,
I know, it's they got to write down the simplest thing. It's kind of freaky.
Yeah. Is there anything else?
That's it.
So, you know, the first time I ever went to Mississippi Nights, first show I ever saw there was David Lindley.
Yeah, David Lindley wrote a lot with Jackson Brown.
So
yeah.
David Lindley was the guy who sang the high part on Stay. Oh, won't you stay?
Yeah.
You know, and he's a great guitar player. And I remember going to that show, and the people that I was working with at the time at the state of Missouri were like, oh, we're going to go see David Lindley. Go with us tonight. This is the guy that played guitar with Jackson Brown. That was the key that got me, you know, interested to go.
Yeah.
And it was a great show. And I'll never forget how great he was.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just kind of cool. That's what I think about when I hear Jackson Brown.
Yeah.
I think of David Lindley.
And, you know, we've, in our podcast here, most of the artists we've done were pretty much, hard rock artists, heavy metal even to a certain degree. So this is the first, I guess you could say, light rock, serious songwriter, singer-songwriter that we've really...
Paul McCartney.
Well, besides that, yeah. Okay.
The one that I had that you were jealous about.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
No, I agree. It was, this is a guy that wrote with the Eagles.
Yeah.
So it's, I hate the term soft rock, but it was... on that
scale
side of the fence, if you will.
But he had his up-tempo songs, too, you know, Running on Empty and, many others. Redneck Friend is also a great rock and roll
song. Love that song.
So the interview started off a little rocky, but picked up, and I think...
That's because John was picking on him, and and then you got to... Then I think you hit some common ground.
Yeah, he just loosened up and just kept talking, man.
Yeah,
he kept talking.
He was a yapper.
Yeah,
that was great.
And I don't think he does a lot of interviews. I don't think you don't hear much from Jackson Brown. And even back in those days, he was... even though he's a great songwriter and put his words to pen real easily, he didn't like to talk a lot.
Right.
You know, he was a serious guy.
Yep.
And protector of his privacy. All right, there you go. That's episode 42, Jackson Brown on the KC Tapes. I'm John Hewlett. You can follow me on Twitter at STLUMan and on Instagram, Johnny Hewlett.
Twitter and Instagram, KC Guy. Favaz, KC95, Favaz.
AMF.
Adios.
My friend.
My fuck. Motherfucker.
The KC Tapes with You Man and Favaz. For more on the history of KC, go to KC95.com or the KC mobile app.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.